Welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. I am your host, Isaac Rudansky, founder and CEO of Adventure Media Group, one of New York's hottest digital advertising agencies. And I am joined today, as I am every day, by the great Patrick Gilbert, director of operations here at Adventure Media Group and author of Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation. And of course, with Danielle, content queen extraordinaire, who will be our moderator. Thank you all very much for tuning in.
Thanks, Isaac. Great to be here. I want to talk today about a few topics related to how it's like for you to run the business and how you spend your time, what you spend your time thinking about, and certain challenges you've had to overcome over the years. But just to kick things off, so it's Tuesday. It's actually election day that we're recording this on. And second day in the week, I think the way that we kind of plan out our week and our agendas really go at a weekly basis. We don't set a lot of monthly guidelines. We don't set a lot of daily tasks. I tend to like to look at things at a week-to-week basis, knowing that there's going to be some variables in between that things jump up and there's fires to put out. So coming into this week, yesterday, Monday morning, you're coming to the office, you're getting up. I know you start your day pretty early. What are the overarching themes, things that you're thinking about, the topics that are taking up your brain space, so to speak?
This week in particular, and I've never been very good at prioritizing time on a daily basis and setting those goals, because there's inevitably things come up that just take precedence. And I think I've just over the years developed a, I guess, more of an instinctive way of managing time, although I'm not saying at all that that's good or I'm proud of that. But high level stuff this week has been a couple side projects. And my brain is always thinking at the start of the week and even at the start of the day, what are the biggest things? Like, I know I can't, like, I can't get everything done. I can't get even most of the things done that I want to get done. But if I had to choose a couple things that I need to make progress on, what are those things? So this week was a couple side projects that hopefully is part of a larger organizational move to higher quality clients. And it's not like you could just flip a switch and generate better clients and or sell better products. But there's many, many steps and stages along the way to the long-term outlook of the types of clients or being the type of agency that we want to be. So there's like two, three major projects that I have in the top of my head that I want to make some sort of progress on, because I think that those projects which are more consultative, it's one that we're dealing with the sports book, when we're dealing with a large retailer, these, it's very interesting. They incorporate, on one hand, relationships with people who could bring clients. On the other hand, it incorporates skills that we need to develop. On the third hand, it incorporates a type of work, which is like the consultative work, which is going to be important for us to refine if we want to attract larger clients. That's top of mind. The other thing top of mind is the team. Right now, we're in a little bit of a weird situation where it's election week, but that's just randomly weird. It doesn't really impact this, but we still are in the pandemic. Some people are remote, some people are not. There's exactly in my mind, it's like addressing what is the attitude. Do people in the office have an attitude where it's now optional? Do people not have that attitude? Do people have the understanding that, well, if you're legitimately dealing with COVID or concerned for COVID based on any circumstance, it's just a weird, I guess coming into the week, it's like, I want to wrap my head around that. What are people's attitudes and how are people doing? There was a couple situations with employees who were feeling overwhelmed with their workload. So working on that.
So that first part that you spoke about, one of those side projects, it seems like it's more of a long-term play. And I think with everything going on, just in general and running a business, it's probably very, very hard to sit down and really focus on something that's going to not really yield any sort of positive outcome for a long time. Why now? And what are you giving up? What are you sacrificing to focus on those side projects you mentioned?
Why now is an interesting question. I think it's a range of factors. One is my personality and the way I've grown the business has always been relatively natural. So we've never looked for outsized growth. I mean, we could grow the business faster. There's no question about it. We could invest more capital. We could bring on experienced salespeople. We could target specific accounts. It's just really not my nature. It's not what I don't think I would necessarily enjoy that. I'm not really looking to accomplish that. I enjoy doing good work and growing naturally. And to me, it's like the next stage. The other element of my personality is I always want more. So I get very tired of things quickly. I get very complacent quickly. I'm like, okay, we did this. Great. What's the next way we're going to challenge ourselves? What's the next way we're going to prove to ourselves, to each other, to the world that we are better than we were a month ago? So to me, these opportunities to prove ourselves is very much connected to the quality of client that we're being given the opportunity to prove ourselves through. It's like an athlete at a certain point needs a certain equipment. Like they need to be challenged by teammates of a similar caliber, right? It's like context is fundamental. Environmental context, interpersonal context, it's fundamental to achievement. So to me, having more challenging clients, that doesn't necessarily mean harder work. It just means more exciting work. It means more impactful work. And that doesn't mean save the whales work. It's more impactful to business outcomes. It gives our team a chance to do more difficult things that we could also be paid for. Of course, like that's really ultimately business growth is about increasing revenue. But it's at the same time, in my mind, we could increase our revenues by getting bigger. We could also increase our revenues by not getting as much bigger, but doing more exciting, interesting, valuable things. And I much prefer the latter. Like that's the type of business I've always wanted to be. That's the type of growth I have always been after. And that's the type of people we have always tried to attract, people who want to thrive and want to be in that culture. And it's interesting, as far as I can tell, is basically every person that we have at the company would find the former environment anathema to their personality. I think they would hate being in a call center. I think people here would hate being in a large churn and burn, high volume, low quality context, whereas that would be fine for plenty of people. I'm not putting that down. I think it's a personality thing. As far as what I'm sacrificing my own education because I'm putting a lot of effort and attention into orchestrating. Like if you look at the first 3-4 years, most of my time was focused on education.
What do you mean by education?
Like learning the actual things. Like if a client needed something, I would learn how to do it. Like I would learn how to manage a Google Ads account. I still think I know how to do it, but I would learn lots of things. I would be spending most of my nights learning, like learning the actual work. Nights, early mornings, during the day. Like it was constant learning.
And now you're spending that time working on... Like when you say nights, mornings, like what is specifically taking up that time now?
I remember the first X amount of years, I don't know how many, let's say the first 4 years even. Anything I was reading late at night, early in the morning, even during the day when I wasn't dealing with a client phone call or the team or whatever it may be, I was getting my hands on every possible piece of content around the industry that I can. Like going very deep into learning statistics or learning Excel or learning Google or learning formulas. Now that time is more spent on communicating with people, reading different types of content. So there's still education. Maybe education is the bad word to use because I think I'm still learning, but it's much more focused on communication. It's much more focused on the larger ideas. A very primitive example. Whereas before I was learning on how to be somebody featured in a case study. Now I'm spending time writing a case study, putting the case studies up and getting the case studies out. Like that would be a primitive example where I'm trying to take what we've accomplished and use that to grow the business, use that to generate new relationships, use that to grow the team.
So I think what you're saying here to kind of summarize all this, right? So going back to how you're prioritizing your time, what's top of mind for you, you have this ever-present need to grow the business and to get better. And there's this constant desire to have the company continue to grow and get better at the work we do. And in doing so, there's a vision of what's ideal. And then there's other shortcuts and other types of ways that you could do it that you don't want to. And as you echoed before, I think all of us would agree that the way that we're going is kind of the way that we all want to go, although it's much more challenging path to get down there. Now, when you got into this though, right? So you've been doing this work for 6 or 7 years now. You got into it almost by mistake, but it really because you liked the work. You liked advertising, you liked managing client campaigns, but now you're also the CEO of a company that happens to be growing and happens to be rather successful and is continuing to be more successful. The better that we do collectively, the less time you probably get to spend doing the things that got you into this to begin with. What is that dichotomy like?
Yeah, it's interesting. You're right. I love the work, most of it, not all of it, but I really enjoy managing a digital advertising campaign, Google, Facebook. And there's many different parts of it that I enjoy. I enjoyed the design. I enjoyed the copywriting aspect. I enjoyed the psychological component. I enjoyed the immediate gratification of it. I enjoyed the data analysis of it. And I also enjoyed being good at it. And I think that's the key that has helped me transition into doing other things. I wrote a post on LinkedIn a few weeks ago where I pushed back on the clarion call of every guru. It's so hackneyed that it's already become a cliche where it's only do a job that you're passionate about. And I think that that's really a bad message to, for people, because what it implies is that you could count on one hand the amount of things that you could be happy doing. It's stifling. And it's also, I think, not true. And I think what is really true is that a person could become passionate about whatever it is that they're doing. It's not that you have like a set amount of things that you're passionate about, whether it's biological or it's become fixed within you by the time you're 17 or 18 years old. That's not true at all. A person should eventually be able to develop the capacity to be passionate about anything they're doing. And that comes from a realization that the human character and you as a person, you could elevate yourself and elevate the people around you by doing a good job. If you're a waiter, you're a busboy, you're a digital account manager, you're a bricklayer, you're a CEO, you're with other people, you're with yourself, you're being challenged, it's difficult. And then facing those challenges, overcoming those challenges and doing a good job and developing competence should innately be a very satisfying experience, especially when you know that you doing a good job is also making other people's circumstances better in life. So that's very powerful to me. I found that to be true. Like, I think that whether it's running the company or it's developing new relationships or it's helping a team member overcome like a stress, I find that if I could be competent at it, I'm very fulfilled. It's meaningful to me because I enjoy and I find passion in being competent at things. I value it. And of course, I don't mean to say that like there aren't things I enjoy more. Like, I certainly don't enjoy dealing with recruiting as much as I enjoy sitting by myself with a good, you know, 70s funk on Spotify, working on an AdWords campaign. Like, I enjoy the second one more.
I like the point that you sort of alluded to there, that it's not as if you had specific things that you are passionate about, but you also, like, you find a lot of joy in doing things well and, like, being good at stuff. And I think that's something that a lot of people feel and probably don't recognize. But if you were to kind of rewind 10 years ago or 12 years ago, before you fell into this career, like, do you remember like what your passions were? Like, if you had read that LinkedIn post that you're kind of, you know, poking fun at right now, that said something to the extent of like, find your passion and follow it, the money will come, whatever it is. And if you took that seriously, what would that have been? What would that of career have looked like? And how can you compare that now to what you currently do?
It's a good question. And a truthful answer to this question is going to get me into a little bit of trouble because I'm going to sound like I'm being hypocritical because it's going to sound like I did follow my passion. And a listener might say, well, it's all easy for you to say that, you know, become passionate about anything, ha, 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 because you're doing what you've always been passionate about. And maybe that's true. I don't really know. It might be fair criticism. I have a very clear memory of, I probably was like 13 or 14 where I was watching commercials. I was downstairs in my cousin's basement, one of those old like 19-inch VCR TV combos. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. Where the VCR always broke, but you still kept the TV and you had to get a second VCR anyway.
Right. Exactly. And it was before they had like eventually after that, they came out with the VCR DVD combos below the actual screen. This was just the VCR. And we were watching commercials and I was like, I told my older cousins, I was like, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I said, I want to be sitting around a table and I want to just come up with ideas for commercials. I'm not exactly doing that, and I never really got to do that. But let's say I'm somewhere tangentially in that world of creativity, because I think there was something very interesting to me where I was looking at this commercial product that was coming through the screen. It was all a facade. It was pixels, and it's fake, and it's not humans interacting. It's very commercial. But what I appreciated was it got me to laugh. It gets you to feel something. It gets you to want something. And I thought maybe like, that's a very interesting career to be in. Like, how do you touch and influence human emotion through a medium which is so impersonal, such a facade of interaction?
So that's interesting. I didn't know that about you. That's the first time I heard that story. I think it's really interesting. I would have assumed that your answer would have been about art and writing.
Yeah, so I was getting there. So then, like, if you would have got me like when I was 19, 21, 22, I wasn't really passionate about advertising. As far as a career, that's the only thing I remember thinking of like, oh, I'd be interested in doing that. I never had that thought about a doctor or a lawyer. A psychologist was something which I toyed around with like later, but certainly in terms of a normal career, it's like, that was the only thing I ever thought, looked at and thought, that's cool. But then once I was like, you know, out of the house, 19, 20, if I would have really bought into that idea that I'm only going to be happy if I follow my passion, it would have absolutely been either art or writing. Like music I like, I'm a delusional person, never so delusional that I felt that I'd be able to make a career out of playing music, but I was certainly delusional enough to think that I'd have been able to make a career out of art or writing.
Yeah. What you enjoy about art and writing and music, those still emotions that you feel that come out of that, that make you passionate about those subjects, come through in the same way that you're currently running the business, right? Like you mentioned earlier, you enjoy writing ad copy. That's writing. You mentioned before, you enjoy the design element of creating a good advertisement. That's art. And I think that's something that really goes overlooked. And I try to tell whenever I, you know, speak to someone that's earlier in their career and they're trying to figure out what to look at. I think so many people default to these types of like pigeonholed, okay, well, this is what I like, so I go this route. And there's not that other element of like, well, you can kind of package your passions and interests and all of a sudden it's like this random job you've never heard of before. Like me personally, this was really helpful for me. I had a mentor that kind of gave me this talk a long time ago. If I was to tell you what I enjoy doing, you would probably tell me that I should be like some sort of like high school coach or high school teacher that like coaches athletics or something, because I like helping people, teaching things, I like building things. But all of those things happen in this job, just in a completely different way. And I think I would imagine you would agree with a lot of that.
I agree with that 100,000,000%. And so much so that I feel this business in particular, advertising, because there's a lot of intermediate layers. There's data analytics, there's discipline, there's copywriting, there's everything. There's all these things. There's technological proficiency, there's statistics. But if you take it to the edges, it's very human to human. It's a person being able to understand another person. This is in client communication. This is an actual campaign development. This is being able to instinctually feel if a certain channel could work, understanding a target audience. It's human to human selling of goods. We try to do it for less money than the goods produce in sales, right? That's really the golden benchmark of good advertising. But if you look at every single team member we have, and this business is uniquely, but every single person we have here is not a unidimensional person interested in what they're interested in, right? Like if you're looking at, if let's say you take a brain surgeon, maybe it's even likely that the best brain surgeon is one who has been singularly obsessed with brain surgery for their entire life. Now, if you're a therapist, that's probably not so good, because what you need to know how to do is different. One is very technical and very specific. One incorporates the entirety of the human spirit. So everyone we have out here, you mentioned your own interests. This is why I ask on an interview. I said, what do you do on the weekends? What are your hobbies? It's a very important question. It's not, I don't ask these questions just for the sake of chit chat, just for the sake of breaking the ice. It's important to me because it's very important to me that people have interests that they've pursued, that knowledge is valuable to them. They're curious people. There's no greater value that I think that's worthwhile than curiosity. Like a person is seeing something, they're walking down the street and they'll look up the word, what the word means. They'll look up the topic on Wikipedia. And everyone we have here is like that to some degree. Like everyone has outside interests. And that's not just, oh, it's an interesting group. No, it's a fundamental bona fide occupational quality that I think impacts one's ability to be in this field and do it effectively. So I definitely agree. As far as myself is concerned, certainly, I do feel that the same neurological triggers where the art and the writing were satisfying to me do have an outlet in this career. And even so much so as like, and by the way, a person has to take ownership, has to be self-directed. So I saw like, I like writing. And of course, so I have my side writing project that I'm working on when I can, but like who the hell knows what's gonna be with that. But I said, like, listen, I have an opportunity in front of me. I write emails every day. Why can't my emails get better? You have to seek and see and keep your eyes open. Is it perfect? Is it a fulfillment of your dream? And maybe Danielle, this goes a little bit to your blog post. Is it the paradigm of my 19-year-old self? No, but I could still find satisfaction in an outlet in improving my email writing. And that was enjoyable to me to become more competent in email writing, writing an email to an employee. Like that's great. Like that's fine. There's plenty of opportunities. Think about your work. Think about who you interact with, how you interact, the things that you like, what you're interested in. And if you think through it for a few minutes, you're most likely will find some opportunities that you could express the things that you love and that you're passionate about through the work that you're already doing.
I love that. And so kind of tying this back to a previous point that you spoke about, as far as the work that you like doing, why you started this business, you like doing the advertising campaigns yourself, and now you do less of that. Like, you need to spend your time not just doing the work, but you also have to spend your time leading the team, managing the team, you know, managing finances of the company and doing kind of all these pain in the neck administrative tasks. But I think you spend a lot of your time worrying about, and this is the very first point you made, about growing the business, sort of putting on a business development and sales hat. And I know in other conversations that you and I have had that you are not a salesperson by trade. In fact, you've said multiple times that the act of sales makes you uncomfortable. From my point of view, where you spend your time, I think you spend a lot of your time in that component of the business more than anything else singularly. So what is that like, and how has that been like over the years? Has that gotten easier? Have you found things about that you've enjoyed? Or is it just something that you know is necessary and you kind of swallow it, you find what you're good at because it's for the good of the business?
It's been very difficult, and it hasn't gotten easier as far as I could tell. I think it's gotten easier in some superficial ways, like where I'm not nervous, although I didn't struggle with that too much because it was a gradual years-long progression from speaking to AD Trophy to speaking to the CMO of American Eagle. That didn't just happen on day one. Like, I'm not saying that I have nerves of steel. If my first call was with the CMO of American Eagle, I'd be peeing in my pants. But to your point, it has not gotten easier because I really don't like it, and I procrastinate. I find ways to avoid it. There's no doubt that there are cases where I've dropped the ball entirely.
You hate asking people for money.
When we sign a client and like that whole stage is over, it's like I celebrate inside myself. But on that note, I've also tried to find ways to get better at it. Because a lot of people, again, this goes back to that first point where maybe it's why the younger generations, even our generation, have such a lower average tenure at any given role. People jump from job to job to job. Whereas if you look at our parents, no, for sure, their parents, our grandparents, it was unheard of to have like this millennial attitude today, like I'm going to go for 6 months here, another 8 months there. People had careers. And I don't know, I'm sure that's a multidimensional analysis. There's probably many reasons for that. But I would not be surprised that one of the reasons is because younger generations are being taught just continue to find the thing you're passionate about. Keep going, 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 going. And eventually the Shangri-La that you're steering your boat towards, you never get there because you've missed all the opportunities along the way to develop passion for what it is that you're able to achieve in your current situation. So to that point, even in the sales process, like I got into Robert Cialdini because of that. I got into some of these ideas of like how to be better at sales, different techniques. Like I've worked on my organization of how I structure my phone calls, like how I do my presentations, how I do an audit. I've continued to try because it goes back to that other ideas like I've developed within myself an interest, or maybe it's natural, I don't know, an interest in competence. So it's like, okay, I have to do this. I'm going to at least get the satisfaction of developing a competency in that domain. And while it's not as enjoyable as developing a competency in playing the drums, it's an unbelievable opportunity that I have that I can make my life better. I can make my people's life better. I can make the team's life better if I could bring in better clients. And that itself is a satisfying thing.
Absolutely. And now you've been a tremendous asset to me over the years. You've helped me become a better leader. You've coached me. You've made me better. You've kind of really forced me to make me uncomfortable and challenge me and force me to develop into everything that I've kind of grown into over the years. And I am one of many people that can say that. But as the person at the top of the organization, how do you do that? Where do you lean on? You know, when I'm having a stressful day or a situation that I don't know how to handle, or if there's a team member that needs coaching that I don't really know how to do myself, you're always there to be able to give some advice because I can lean on you for that. So how do you manufacture that? Where can you look and how do you manage that?
Well, first of all, thank you. Those words are meaningful to me. I find that those interactions the most meaningful of all. Like, so interactions where there's a person who I'm able to help, especially a person that I have a relationship with. So like I get a lot of questions from students here and there, and I help them when I can. I help them more out of a sense of responsibility. I don't really have a personal relationship with my students. Some of them I do, but let's say the team or family, to me, it's like basically, it's the same thing. My venture media team and my family, I just consider it, I can't really tell a qualitative difference in those relationships. But knowing that people will rely on me, and knowing how satisfying and how fulfilling those experiences are provides ample motivation to grow with the team. So as I see the team working hard and progressing and getting better and knowing that I want to be growing with them and be able to continue to be a support for them, it really motivates me to achieve. The second part is I use the team also. I use you a lot. If I'm overwhelmed with stress and I have a lot of things on my plate, I'll route some emails your way that I would have otherwise taken. I would say, listen, can you handle X, Y, and Z clients or tasks or issues? I'll come to you and I'll discuss something that I just don't have the headspace to think through myself. I'll use the team. And that goes back to like this friendship element that we have here, where I'm just not ashamed of like, where if I'm struggling with something or if I can't figure something out and I made a stupid mistake, I have such respect for the team and I have such respect for their level, your level of competence and intelligence, that I enjoy coming clean, like owning up to mistakes or errors or things that I don't know. And I feel that that respect is given to me also. So in an environment where you feel you actually authentically respect the people you're interacting with, and where you also feel authentically respected, it's in those environments, even if in my title and ultimately responsibilities stop with me, and it is, of course, that there's no way to avoid that extra degree of stress and just weight on your shoulders. It just comes with the job. But it, I think the environment we have is one which I have so many opportunities to get something off my chest, to talk, to seek help, and to know that it'll be there.
And I think that's something that Rand Fishkin has actually mentioned in his book, Lost and Founder, was that he carried a great deal of stress and anxiety with him at all times. And then finally, when he was able to lean on his team, even for his subordinates, people that, you know, reported to him, for him to be able to be honest and say, hey, look, I'm dealing with a lot right now. I need you to help me out with this, you know, one or two things, provides, it's two things. You're able to get that help. And also the person that you're leaning on has that same level of satisfaction that you mentioned at the beginning of this, saying, oh, now I can help somebody. I can help even the CEO of the company or my boss or whomever kind of get through a difficult situation. There's a great deal of satisfaction that comes with that. My last question for you, what is the most challenging thing or the hardest decision you've had to make that I wouldn't already be aware of?
So this is not so much something which I don't think you're aware of in the global sense of aware. It's like, not, oh my God, I can't believe that we actually had, like, I can't believe you hired that employee 4 months ago and you never told me. Where has he been? Like, it's not going to be something shocking in that sense. So it was sort of a confluence of factors, and maybe I don't think I've spoken about the weight of these factors. One was in the beginning of the pandemic, losing clients and really not knowing if I was going to have to fire people and if I was going to have to lay people off. And as much as I didn't intend to or want to and was willing to do go to the end of the world to avoid it, like if I had an employee who I wanted to get rid of, I very likely would have used that as an excuse to make it easier for me to get rid of the employee. Well, I didn't have anyone I wanted to get rid of, which made it much more difficult because I had no idea. It was a totally up in the air thing. I have a very optimistic outlook in general, but this was when some large clients were shutting down. We had come off a very difficult, or we were dealing with a couple of big pitches. We had lost one or two big ones recently, and a lot of our time was being spent on another very large pitch, which I knew that the chances of winning were very small. We ended up not winning that pitch. So it was at the same time losing business left and right, knowing for sure that the goals I set growth-wise for the course of 2020 were just off the table because all bets are off, which is very stressful to me in my brain because it, to me, that represents failure, even though as much as you could say these are factors outside of your control, no one could have predicted a pandemic, and not only could no one have predicted it, it's also not your fault. It's still, it was very upsetting. But the biggest stress internally in my mind was like, day to day, are we going to have to lay people off? And that would be like, that would be devastating to me. It really would. Like, you pick any single person part of the team, it would have been really devastating to me. I get angry when we lose a client. And that's, it's like, to me, that emotion is just, it's raw. But I get very depressed when something adverse happens to a team member who I have nothing but goodwill towards, who has worked hard, who has shown loyalty, who has been a friend, who has been a member of my family. My greatest satisfaction is being able to provide a support network for people. And the thing that makes me depressed, I've never once in my life gotten depressed over losing a client, ever. I've only been angry. And even anger is like the furthest the emotions will get. But if something adverse happens to an employee, it really hurts me. So that was a big factor. That was extremely like stressful, and more than stressful, it was like, it really put my frame of mind into a different mindset. And then it was like a weird stress. Like then at the same time, coming out of those months when we started hiring, it was like my game face was like, this is great and this makes sense and what we're doing is good. In my mind, it was like I was very much dealing with an internal conversation that went sort of like, am I losing it? Yes. Are you sure? I'm pretty sure. Is this, you know, is this the last straw? Like, are you going to be locked up? Are you going to, you know, need to be heavily medicated? Most likely. Like that was like my basic internal conversation. Cause like, it just seemed everything was so unknown. All the factors were so complicated to figure out. Didn't have any strong feeling of confidence that we were making the right decision outside of just an instinctive thing. Right now I feel, you know, a whole lot better about it.
And so everything you spoke about up until this point, as far as focusing on the long term, putting yourself in the uncomfortable situations of learning how to get good at sales, something that you have always kind of hated, finding those passions and those things that you probably wouldn't have articulated several years ago, spending the late nights and early mornings learning new topics, all of that is essentially what helped you get through what you just admitted to be the most challenging decision or obstacle that you've encountered. So I think in the end, as far as like what has gone well, I think all of that subtle stuff, whether you planned it or not, kind of led to that.
Yeah. I wanted to add one thing. There was like three different people had asked me for raises during that stretch of time, going from the not knowing who I'm going to lay off to hiring five new people. There was like three different salary discussions that just added internal fuel. And it's a salary discussion is very different than a discussion about like, what should I do with this client? Should we choose Spotify or Facebook? It's not just a business thing. Should we buy this software? It could be the same amount of money. I have to make a decision on $5,000 as an example about a software, about a salary. When it comes into a person's salary, you're negotiating a person's well-being. And this is the person whose well-being matters to you. So it very much compounded and exacerbated that internal discomfort and agita, severe anxiety. And I think that by and large, I continue to go through the motions. And I think that's it's also another principle of mine in general. It goes back to this idea of success ripples outward. Like, I don't really know the impact right now of working on my writing. I don't know the impact that I know right now of working on business or working on my temper or working on my interpersonal relationships. You don't know. You know that they're good things in theory. You know that they might impact this thing right in front of you. But like you said, if you're looking at the long term, all these things are building blocks that will ultimately ripple out into unexpected good things.
Okay, last question. Where would you hide a dead body?
On the second page of Google. Everyone knows that. Thank you guys very much for joining this episode. Patrick, the director of operations at Adventure Media, has a new book out, Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation. Get it on Amazon, pre-order it in hard copy, buy a copy for your friend, your significant other, a child, a parent, Danielle Immerman, content queen, moderator extraordinaire, and I am Isaac Radansky, founder of Adventure Media, and thank you for tuning in to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast.